We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Feel like Kobe in the fourth quarter. This is the Name More NBA podcast brought to you by Prize Picks, coming at you Tuesday morning. It's March 5th after the Wolves beat the Blazers by 5 on Monday night. In ways, I guess, a bounce back win after losing 2 games over the weekend. At home, I got Wolves beat writer Jace Frederick here with me today, who asked Chris Finch this question after the game last night.
Is tonight one of those nights where it shows just how important it is to have like a group of mature veterans that you can kind of lean on?
Yes, very much so. Tonight was always going to be a case of finding the right guys in the right combinations who could put some distance in the game. So,
yes, very much so. What's up,
yes,
Chase?
Yes.
Just on his face there, too.
Yeah. Then you can tell, like, after he said yes, he didn't even want to say anything. I was like, yes.
Right. So, next question.
Good combination.
And it was Rudy, Kyle, and Mike, I think, drove a lot of it last night.
Other guys contributed, but those guys definitely drove the bus.
Yeah, and so I think we should start with them, right? It's like, it was a win. We should focus on the positives of Kyle. I think Rudy and Mike drove a lot of that win last night. Kat and Ant,
for various reasons, they were there.
But they've been struggling. They've been struggling of late. Who do you want to start with between Anderson, Gobert, and Conley?
I think it's got to be Rudy. Clearly was like the quote unquote star of that game. I don't know, like what, 25, 16, and 3, I think. 3 blocks.
Well, they missed one shot.
Yeah.
Push shot, and that, damn it.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that little push shot. I don't know. Ever since some podcaster said he should do it more, I feel like I've barely seen any of them go in. torpedoing the man's career. But yeah, I mean, that's just like what you expect. And like, it really is like they've done such a great job really not losing to terrible teams this year. They've obviously lost to Charlotte and San Antonio, but like you're going to have a couple. Like there's no way you're going to go through the whole year unscathed. They've done a really nice job of taking care of business. And last night was like a G League team. Really I love teams like Portland because you'll get guys like somebody has to score, somebody has to rebound. So guys will get counting stats on these terrible teams. So it's like he's a player. And then the next year, it's like maybe gets a two-way. Maybe. Because it's like, hey, not
really. Duop Reith signed an extension.
Well, yeah, he signed a deal. He was the second best player on the team last night. I mean, like, I'm not him. I mean, he would probably be an end-of-the-bench player on NBA teams. But, sure. You know, like, we'll see what happens to, like, a guy like Bannon. Like, what does he get? But anyway, and some guys just didn't bring it at all. And that is how you can somehow lose these games. But when you've got a guy like Rudy, who's healthy and just does the things that he always does. He literally just approaches the game the exact same way. And because the competition is a little bit inferior, to him doing things the exact same way, handling his business in the exact same manner, ends in 25 and 16. And literally, like, just held. I just kept asking guys, like, about the high floor he creates. And I really do think it's a big thing of like, this is why they don't get blown out in games. This is why they're like competitive in every game, because they always have somebody doing his thing. And his thing is a big part of what the team does, of controlling the interior, getting on the glass, like a lot of things that if you don't do, you can get blown out. Because Rudy Gobert is out there, you don't get blown out, and you won't lose to terrible teams because you have this massive built-in advantage. Like, and I'll give a quick shout out to Charlie Walton, covers the team for, obviously for Canis, and Dunk Zone coverage. And he tweeted this out in 60 of 62 games this year. Rudy has 10 plus points in 80% of games, 10 plus rebounds in 83% of games,
wow,
2 plus blocks in 67% of games, 2/3, and a positive plus minus in 67% of games, 2/3. Like,
wow,
that is consistency as consistency mm-hmm. gets. Like that, and that's what it looks like too. Does the exact same things, has the exact same approach. Some nights it won't be as great as others, but most of the time it's going to be. There's just a baseline, and that is so key, I think, of for this team having as many wins as they have. I really do think it's a huge part of it.
It also kind of makes the over the weekend like he wasn't as good. I don't think he was like terrible.
Yeah, yeah.
But it does kind of glare when he is below that floor because it's so rare, right?
Mm-hmm. Right. It stands out like a like a sore thumb. Like it really does.
It does. You asked Conley about the floor idea with Rudy after the game.
Rudy on the night like this, it just seems like he sets such a high floor.
Yeah, Rudy was super locked in today. When we were slipping, he was the guy that brought us together. He was the guy that made the stops when we needed, got the big buckets when we needed. Super efficient, super dominant, and that's what we need out of him. We need him cleaning up the glass when guards go in there and miss shots, and they're trying to send two and three guys at him, and he's still able to fight through and make plays. That's who he is, and I thought tonight was a great performance from him.
I think Gobert, as you were saying, he's been so consistent this season. I think he's getting better with some of the patience was a big word he talked about after the game, like underneath the basket. I think you asked him right about like fighting that urge to get an offensive rebound and maybe like immediately go back up and be patient, get a pivot so you can get that dunk rather than maybe like some sort of floater or hook shot type of thing. There have been, this would be fair to say, right? You think Rudy's offense has progressed over the course of the season?
Yeah,
I mean, not like a leap or anything, but yeah, like maybe a little
bit
more.
It's doing the same things just more consistently, more effectively, mm-hmm. More efficiently. But it's right. doing the exact same things, but it is like last night. And I do think there's something too, like you can do this against Portland more so mm-hmm. than you can do it against other teams. But, like getting offensive rebound, like you said, like pivoting or like collecting yourself, getting your feet under you. He said balanced, just making sure he has his balance. And then going up and going up strong and finishing, likely mm-hmm. with a dunk. Now, like I said, like Portland's more of a, these guys just aren't as good and they're going to reach in. And if they're going to reach in, they're going to foul probably. Where teams with like good veteran defenders, guys with good hands, like they might actually get there and get the ball. But just in general, like you just going up and just going up as fast as you can on balance and just try to put it on the glass, like it doesn't end that well. So like get your bearings, and go up strong. And if you try to dunk it, the odds are you're going to score or get fouled. The odds of that are pretty high. It's doing that. And then just like the Wolves have done a better job, I think, on like lob feeds and whatnot, just being more aggressive, even the ones that don't go their way. Like it's a high percentage play. And I think they've done a really nice job reading that and being more aggressive with it.
This is kind of an in the weeds sort of thing, but I actually think it matters. Remember last year, a lot of the time we would, you talk about Rudy in a drop exclusively and like, the need sometimes when it is a Luka Doncic or a Trae Young or something like that to play up at the level and what are, what is the Wolves' willingness to do that? Because you do kind of need to do that against a high, high level individual creators, which I think the Wolves will see in the playoffs at some time. And they did that against Anthony Simons with Gobert. And I think, one, that's a credit to Simons. He's a good offensive creator himself. But to me, given that it's at this level of opponent, and maybe it was just to try some more stuff, but they feel confident or willing to do that more often than they did a year ago. And what we're talking about is like up at the level, rather than actually for people who watch the game, Rudy being up at the level led to a lot of those duop reef threes at the beginning of the game. He would kind of like set that screen and then kind of peel off of it so Simons could get it to him, which is, always a counter and a pick with a pick and pop type of big. But I think Rudy is has gotten better. He's just doing it more often. And I think that matters. You know, there's going to be, I don't know, maybe 8 games, 10 games over the course of the season where Rudy did that. And if they get a Dallas in the first round, I was actually thinking I should maybe go through the list of how many teams in the playoffs they will do that to. But just having Rudy be able to play at a variety of levels in pick and roll coverage matters. Because if there's only one or two things that he can do or that you will go to, you know, you leave yourself somewhat susceptible. Gobert, I think this is part of the his defensive player of the year case, is he has been good in drop. He gets up at the level sometimes. I think he's been great in isolation on switches. And again, when you go back to the Utah days, there was just less of that. And they were much more reliant on, we're going to play the same way in coverage every single time. I think it matters, even if they got hurt by it pretty bad in the first half with that coverage, that they're willing to go to it. And yeah, I think that'll matter come playoff time.
Yeah, it's good to get reps too, like, right? Like, no matter what. And you can probably go through the number of teams pretty quickly in the West that can do it, that you would do that.
Yeah, well, I was thinking like Booker.
Probably Booker, I would.
Maybe. I don't remember. I mean, I guess they only played them once this year and the Wolves were half asleep. I don't remember that they did that to them. You're not going to do that against Shea.
No.
You're going to play it back against him. Murray, I think you're... I don't know. I think you try... I'm just thinking of the playoffs last year. I don't think they got up that high against him, right?
You probably
like,
should.
Who else would...
You should, maybe, have, yeah, you should have. He gets
maybe
on, like,
they
a,
weren't comfortable with
the
it
coin,
as much.
The coin Murray flurries, you know, like... That,
sure.
That is absolutely...
Just get it off his hands.
At least in situational, that should be something that happens. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and maybe that's the point, is if they're more confident in it in this second half of the season, they can do that, you know, more often. But also just the switching, like, then what they did in the second half was they switched even with Gobert, yep, like often, and just that. I don't think they have it like nailed down. I'm not like, okay, this team has every single coverage down.
Yeah, no, 100%.
They're not number one at every single one, right, of them, but they are doing a lot of different things. And again, when we're looking at all this stuff sort of through a playoff lens, I think that matters a lot.
And like a Luka or something, okay, like that's the biggest thing, is change it up. Like, you can't do the same thing again and again. We've seen that in past Wolves seasons, games, whatever, with Dallas, where like same coverage. By the fourth quarter, Luka has figured it out. And all of a sudden they're just shredding them, what did previously work defensively for 2.5 quarters.
Yeah. Against Luka, it needs to be a diversity of coverages, big man coverages, yep, and probably a diversity of guys who are on the ball. Nikhil, right, Jaden, Ant, whatever it is down the line there. And yeah, I feel better about everything about this defense this season, but I feel better about their ability to do that. And weirdly, a random Monday game against the Blazers, I think, kind of showed their willingness to do that. Let's move on to Kyle Anderson. Kyle, in this guy, I was looking up his numbers. Actually, I'll play the clip. From Finch first, I asked him just about kind of Anderson of late. Kyle Anderson, obviously one of those. He's just more broadly felt like a lot more congruent, yeah, in what you guys are doing. What has led to that? That he's been doing more so, maybe over the last month.
Yeah, you know, I think, geez, I don't know. It just feels like he's settled down post trade deadline. You know. Just, I think, getting more comfortable with the rotation around everybody. You know, when Monty comes in, I think it kind of helps everything just a little bit, you know, kind of figuring out those combinations as a coach, as a staff. So just, you know, lots of little things like that. I think it's also just, you see it in his shot. He's just trusting his shot more, you know, and he's been shooting it pretty well, you know, so.
Jace, I was Finch has mentioned that a couple times with Anderson and post trade deadline kind of having a clearer head. He's played in 9 games since the deadline. And
it's very clear that when he says that, not post All-Star break, just 7 games, like post trade deadline, like that very much feels like a specific time, you know, like, and who would know that better than like the coach who's probably had some conversations, you know, like,
right. Kyle's kind of like, oh, yeah, whatever, like, about it.
Kyle did it like that. I know people talk about, like, the Instagram thing. He's like, that was nothing. It was like, you know, like, it's something. There are a lot of things that run through guys' heads in times like
particularly that. In a contract season, right?
Yes, yeah. 100%.
I mean, how can it not? Like, if you know, if you are Kyle Anderson and you get, you know, traded as salary fodder or something, and you become like a Marcus Morris, maybe you're like a buyout guy then. Like, how does that impact your free agency the next year? You think about it from their individual standpoint, that could, you know, impact $5-8 million a year.
1,000% versus if you're like the seventh guy on a team that goes to like a West Finals or even like a competitive second round or something, like, and you're on the TV of everybody. And they're like, oh yeah, this Kyle Anderson, he is versatile. He makes some good plays. He's a winning player, you know?
Right. Now, that all could of a sudden, $10 million or whatever.
Yeah. Right. Right.
So I did look up the numbers, and so 9 games post All-Star break. And what I noticed is they're basically last year's numbers. Like points per shot attempt, which is just like
huge one.
A different sort of way to say, you know, effective field goal percentage or whatever. But he was 1.167 last year, and he's since the All-Star break, or sorry, since the trade deadline, 0.117 or 1.17. So the same. And then if you go before the deadline, it was 1.027, which is actually a pretty drastic drop there. And it's the same shots. He's taking a couple more threes, but it's pretty much the exact same game. It just feels, which was what last year looked like too. It just wasn't as effective. Spacing wasn't there. He wasn't as confident in the shot. And before the deadline, the only rotation player, which I say rotation player in quotation marks, that had a worse offensive rating on the team was Shake Milton. In that pre-deadline time of the season, only one that was worse than Kyle. And since the deadline, Kyle Anderson's offensive rating is far and away the highest on the team, 122.6, with the fourth best defensive rating, 102.6. His net rating's plus 20 in these 9 games since the deadline has passed. And that's kind of what he was last year. You know, it's the same like 8-4-3 or whatever sort of stat line, but you kind of got to scroll over to the far part of the box score to look at that plus minus and what he was doing to get other teammates involved and not be a problem himself. That's what post deadline Kyle Anderson looks like. And I think that's pretty meaningful to at least be able to kind of believe that that's back when it seemed like that was gone, you know, maybe back in December or something like that.
I think Conley said last night, like Kyle understands that he needs to be like a creator for Minnesota when he's out there. And a part of that definitely does come from like creating for yourself as well. And that's the thing that I've noticed with him is like just much more aggressive and quick decisions of like, I'm going here and getting himself into that 6 to 8 foot range and putting it up. It's not always going down, but like it's when you're just going with confidence, he's definitely scoring more. And then he's establishing himself as a threat. And now it's easier to create because the biggest thing for the first half of the year is like, he looked hesitant. He didn't look like he even wanted to get into that 10-foot range and score. Like, and a lot of them were misses, and it was like, this just, there's no conviction in anything that he's doing right now. And so then now you're not a threat to score, and it's really hard to create, and things are really jumbled up, and people are, you know, like, sticking on their guys. And so, like, turnovers are more frequent because there's no passing lanes. Like, I really think it does all start with him being more confident and assertive with his own offense and just a little bit of a threat. Score once or twice, and now all of a sudden that playmaking
becomes, you got to be guarded.
Yeah. And that's where he kind of thrives. So I really do think like it's him asserting himself offensively has just opened everything up for himself and his teammates around him, and it allows him to be the playmaker that was so valuable last year.
Today's show is brought to you by Falling Knife Brewing Company, and this is just kind of the schedule ahead for this week. They actually have Trivia Mafia on Wednesday, but then also Wolves games on Thursday and Friday night this week. Those are kind of the, as I understand it, the most fun ones to be at Falling Knife for. So put that on your radar. Obviously, the Wolves are on the road. I think the game starts at 6 against the Pacers on Thursday, and then Friday is 6:30 against the Cavs. So we always want that on your radar. And then also they are going to stay open late for the game on Sunday night in LA. So as always, keep Falling Knife Brewing Company on your radar as a place to go for Wolves games this season. And then also quickly, today's show is brought to you by Prize Picks. And I was just looking at like kind of the slate of national games tonight. If you want to just go all in on a big, you know, the Celtics play the Cavs in the first TNT game, and then Nuggets by the Suns in the second TNT game tonight. If you take kind of the amplified Jason Tatum to have 35 plus points, Nikola Jokic to have 30 plus points, those are, again, are amplified odds. You bet 20 to win 150 on that, like we did last week when it was a random, you know, Wolves off night, but a lot of national TV games. We can do the same thing. People, you know, take screenshots of what you got going on Prize Picks, tag me in them, and we'll kind of watch those together tonight. Again, it's prizepicks.com, Prize Picks app, promo code Dane for a $100 sign up bonus. Let's talk about Cat and Ant.
Whoa.
Talk about Conley. You want to do Conley?
Yeah, you said all three of those guys, and they were just
I thought we were
going to
get
Mike
them before
Conley?
The break. All right. Yeah.
Well, yeah, and then we didn't. Spot. And you're Conley. Like, Ant and Cat. Oh, okay.
Okay. Fine. Fine. We'll do Conley. You talk about him.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. So, like, Mike basically, like, played last night, you know, bet second game of back to back. Obviously, like, those are spots.
Basically,
Portland,
he did.
Yeah. You should. I wasn't finished with my sentence. You should. It's a good spot for Mike to sit. Played last night because it was like a comma sentence and then get back to the original sentence. Like, yeah.
Comma sentence.
Grammar. Yeah. He wanted to find a rhythm, wanted to kind of just get himself in a groove. I think be more aggressive in general. That's kind of necessary for him. And he did that. He's looking for his own offense, not even his own points, but just like he felt like he'd been kind of a bystander in the games leading up to that. And frankly, like, so when the ball's not even in his hands, he's not even a part of the offense, then it really does become like, why is Mike even out there? I mean, you can see that. And it's like, Mike doesn't look very good. It's like, because the things that he is best at is when, like, he is at least kind of running the offense to some degree. But that wasn't even what I wanted to talk about. But the biggest thing was when I asked him, like, hey, when, what do you, how do you adapt when, like, you know, like the guys who usually carry you don't have it? And obviously that was in reference to Ant and Cat, so we'll get to that in a bit. But Mike was like, we have a lot of guys who have done that, who have done that before and played that role and had nights where they can go for 20 to 25 and carry the weight for that particular afternoon or whatever. And in my head, I was like, a lot of guys. Like, you're just talking about yourself.
Right. I thought that too. I was like, it's like Nikhil? No.
No.
Kyle? No.
Rudy has always kind of had the exact same offensive role he does on this team, too. Like,
you're yeah, just he had 25 about... last night.
Yeah, but you're just talking about yourself, Mike. So just trust each other. If Ant comes to me and goes, I ain't got it, man. I just had a baby. I'm tired or whatever it is, whatever the issue, I'll be like, all right, I got you. Or vice versa with Kat or whatever it is. You can tell he enjoys nights like last night where it's like, oh, I'll do more. Like, you know, I'll run more offense here. I'll take a few more shots. Like, he knows it's not his role on his team, but you can tell it kind of, he gets the itch to like, I want to be more offensively aggressive, like with my own shot and whatnot. And yeah, I think he enjoys nights like that. And it probably does kind of help get him in a better rhythm, even when he heads into games where he will not be as involved as he was last night. Right.
Finch talked in his pregame media. He was asked about, you know, because Mike had been struggling. And, you know, and maybe looked a little banged up. He kind of like rolled his ankle, fell over in that one game hard on, I think that was the Friday night game. Just, you know, again, the question many of us have been asking all season, like, you know, how much are you going to rest him or whatever? And it was interesting in the pregame. Finch talked about how Conley was on a load management program in Utah, and him and Conley talked about how being on that load management program in Utah, maybe sitting out second half of back-to-backs, Conley really felt cost him his rhythm in Utah, and he didn't want to do that, you know, here in Minnesota, which I think we knew certain degrees of that, but it was interesting to hear them, like Finch say, name that he had a load management thing in Utah, and he clearly hasn't here in Minnesota. You know, we've talked to Mike, and it was a goal of his this season, clearly, to play in as many games as he can, and that, you know, I guess I kind of go both ways on it, where it seems great that he did play because he did get that rhythm back, you know, last night. But then there's a couple of the other games, you know, there's like the Clippers game. It's like, you know, didn't really look yourself. And so I find myself kind of going back and forth on that, where I'm like, maybe Conley could use, you know, another day off here or there. But maybe the broader point is they're trying to find something in between the middle of like playing all 82 games and being on, you know, an old man load management type program. And, you know, Finch has a great relationship with Conley. They're talking about it. Like, I just you got to trust that, right? Like they're thinking about the same things we are here, and this is what makes Conley feel, you know, most comfortable. So why not roll with that, particularly if it means playing one of your best players, you know, more often.
Yeah, I agree. I think you really do have to lean on Mike and what he thinks is best for him there, because he really does, you know, having done multiple things now, taking multiple approaches in his career, he probably does have an idea of like, here's what I think is better for me.
Sure.
And certainly if you can get health and performance involved of like, hey, Mike, this one like really makes sense. But I think for Mike, like, he has at least listened. He's taken some off, you know, like that Celtics one. Yeah. He was like, yeah, no, fine. And day of, I should not play tonight, you know, that kind of thing. So like,
it's not
like
some discipline.
It's not, right? Yeah. It's not like he's stubborn to the sense of like, I'm playing every game.
Yeah.
So like, hey, if he's just at least semi-realistic, but, you know, generally knows like, I kind of need to play this game. That makes a lot of sense to me. And even like, I agree with you, he didn't look like himself. And so I don't know if he's like 100% physically. I don't, you know, a lot of guys probably aren't. Just because it doesn't show up on the injury report doesn't mean it's not there. But like the Clippers, like their length, their size, like that, I think that is going to bother Mike, and he'll have some good games and he'll have some bad games.
That's a great point. The Celtics too, like, they played him. It's like, man, that's a tough match. Like 5'11", 6 foot Mike Conley against a team who's pretty much everyone out there 6'4", 6'5", like two, like Drew Holiday is like the smallest guy they play, you know.
Right.
It is a tough matchup for him against
both ends of court.
And defensively, he really has to work there. It's not just moving your feet, right? It's like moving your feet and getting in the way and being strong and physical, which is very different doing that than against, you know, a smaller, quicker guard, or oftentimes he guards like stretch fours, you know, who are just running around the perimeter. That seems like what he's most comfortable with is in that chase role. They need him in that. You know, maybe you can pull Cat or Nas out of a chase, and that's what, you know, where Mike can kind of serve some value there while also maybe saving himself a little bit. So as has been the case all season, they've been not load managing Mike, but managing the way in which they kind of deploy him. And it was just good to see him kind of get a rhythm back, because it was feeling a little bit like for Mike and Rudy over the weekend, like, uh-oh, like the older guys starting to hit a wall a little bit, you know, not the rookie wall, but like the vet wall. And to see Conley and Gobert after maybe two of their worst games, maybe their worst stretch of the season, at least as a duo, to see them both be like probably the two most impactful players on the team last night. I think that matters. Are we allowed to talk about Finch?
Here's a good way to get into it. Like, it is funny that everybody talks about that was, you know, the guy's not playing well last night. Like, that was the fifth game in 7 days, another back to back. It's like, yeah, right. the old guys were the ones who managed to muster up enough to get out there and play solid basketball, you know.
Right. Yeah. Well, here, I'll play Finch on Cat and Ant, and then we can get into it.
Seems like neither Ant or Cat has been sharp lately. Like, yeah. What are you seeing from those two, and what do you think needs to happen to kind of get them back going?
I mean, they're just chasing the game too much, you know. I think they got to pick up their decision making. You know, I think Ant for sure tonight, you know, was looking to facilitate. You know, we talked about just kind of getting that ball moving early so everyone can touch it. He has to just make sure that he doesn't lose his aggressiveness. We still need him to be aggressive. I think it's a lot of Cat's issues have to do with spacing. You know, just get to a better spacing like he was doing a couple weeks ago, where he has the shot, he has the closeout, and he has, you know, right now we're trying to post up in the mid-range way too much, and it becomes a wrestling match, bogs down the floor. So you know, looking forward to a good film session coming up here after our day off and starting to build things back in a better way.
It was pretty noticeable right away that in the first quarter,
the end of that answer where he's like trying to build things up in a better way. He's like, these guys look like a disaster right now. Like, that's the look on his face.
Well, it was like, okay, we'll do Ant first. Like, so clearly, right, so they don't have time to have any sort of practice or film session because it's a, you know, back to back.
Yeah. After the weekend. Time to get to the game.
Right. But it was, you know, it's clear, I think, that they talked to Ant. They're like, okay, ball movement, right? You know, we need to get back to moving the ball, but don't have the opportunity to really show when and where to do that. So in the first quarter, once Ant eventually checked into the game.
Yeah.
There was like, there was one fast break where, you know, he normally, I don't know if he had an advantage, might've been like 2-on-2, but the situation in which Ant goes, you know, in a normal game, goes all the way to the basket and tries to finish there. And he like
does finish. I mean, does finish. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. He pulled it out and passed it. It was like, that looked like something clicking in his head of their like ball movement. Ant. And it's like, no, this isn't not in this situation, like a fast break. You need to go like transition. Go ahead. Go all the way to the basket. So with Ant, that's always like part of the process of.
I felt like he just didn't want to ball movement. I felt like he just didn't even want to run. Like he didn't run. I don't think he ran at any point in the first three quarters of the game. And that fast break was included. He didn't run. I mean, that was what was so weird last night is like, it's one thing if it's like, I don't want to shoot. I want to get my teammates involved. He didn't run at hardly any point in the game until the fourth. Like that was what was so weird about that to me. I agree with you on the ball movement. We've seen games like this against bad opponents. He's like, I'm going to get off, let everybody else get theirs, whatever. Get off the ball. Like that was a lot of that. And then a lot of just like, I'm just here tonight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I don't know. Obviously, with both Cat and Ant, like, I will acknowledge, you know, they have both have things, or last week had big things going on off the court. And so that makes, I don't say any of this to be like, an indictment of their care factor or whatever. Right. But they just did not look like themselves, right? Probably because of the things they have going on off the court. But also a trend for both of those guys is uneven effort against bad teams. Probably Ant more than Cat or anyone on the team. Like you the Blazers are going to come to town or the Spurs or something like that. You just kind of at this point know you're not going to get 48 minutes of Ant, right? The good Ant. Maybe in the fourth quarter, you know, he's going to turn it up or second half, or maybe that third quarter, go for that knockout punch. But
I feel like more of a passiveness. I feel like it's 48 of Ant, and I do feel like it's 48 of Jaden as well. I feel like those two are the two that I kind of point up of like, I don't think these guys are going to really bring it for large stretches. Mm-hmm. They might, like, Ant's going to bring it in the fourth, and it's going to be like, what do you mean? He finished with 18 points and efficient shooting or whatever, and he hits a three that put the game away. But, yeah, those two, like, they definitely crank it up for other teams and not for some.
I think with Cat, it's interesting that, you know, Finch talked about spacing and needing to get a little bit away from the mid-range post-ups because they kind of bogged down the offense overall. And I think we talk a lot about what Ant needs to do in late game, and not that Carl doesn't have late game stuff, but I think a lot more about with Carl, it's getting going over the course of the game, being that like, which, you know, I think it was the third quarter, he had that stretch of like maybe three buckets and four possessions or something like that. That's what you're wanting to find over the course of the game, probably in every single quarter, a pocket like that to find Cat to have a, you know, to be not just an innings eater, but like a really efficient, productive innings eater. And that's been come and go a lot, I think, since All-Star break deadline, whatever. And they do, I think, need that film session to kind of relock in on like, what are we trying to get to when we are going through Cat here? And a lot of the times it's like, it's a response to, all right, they're putting two on the ball on Ant. So now we're going to pivot into our playing through Cat offense. And then you kind of get to that. And if the post-ups are in the mid-range or out to the three-point line, like that's not going to necessarily get you good offense or quick offense. That's when I think the offense gets the stickiest. Carl catches it at like 20 feet, kind of squares into it, slowly finds his attack, and oftentimes still even scores through that, but it bogs down the spacing, bogs down some of that stuff. Like in the last 20 games of this season, I think more than anyone on this team, I want to see like a handful of go-to actions that you can just get Cap in a good spot anywhere other than like 19 feet away from the basket, you know, the square up going like that. It happens over the course of the game where it's like quick, decisive. And honestly, the other players being quick and decisive to find Cat, set a good screen, have him come peeling off of it, whatever. That's what I think when Finch talks about a film session. How do we find more effective, decisive, productive positions to put Cat in offensively? Because they need him to eat innings offensively for this team to be a better offensive team, I think.
doesn't it feel right now like his repeatable offense comes almost entirely from the top of the floor?
Pretty much always has, right?
Yeah, I mean
since they started doubling
early, right. Early in the career, I did come in the post, but like, but I agree. Like that's part of the thing. And from the top of the floor, like, yeah, there are a few actions you can get, but often like his best offense comes in like trailer transition, like that kind of stuff. And like, that's just not super repeatable. That's situational. Yeah. So yeah, I agree with you. If you can find
can we get a Cat Ant two-man game, high pick and roll, Rudy in the dunker? Like, I mean, that just blows my mind is how rarely that happens. I mean,
if you were like playing with them, if you're playing with them on 2K, that's all you would do.
Okay, I mean, like, but we talked about the Simons and Duop Reith thing.
Yes, I'm not saying you're not wrong. I'm saying like if you played on 2K, that's all you do because it's obvious, right? Like that's you know, you're getting your two best offensive players involved. I don't know if they I kind of wonder sometimes if they just think like if we just have these two running the offense together, like we're gonna have a lot of bad decisions. I honestly think that's maybe where they're at. Because I can't think that hasn't been like at least explored heavily in practice or something. Like I don't, because we don't see it in games. I agree with you, and especially even in like late game, like something like that.
I just don't think that's a complicated action.
It's not. It should be pretty easy.
Particularly if they're bringing up the second, big up to Ant to trap or put two on the ball there. Like if Cat does what Reith did last night, you set that screen and you like kind of spray out pop.
Yep.
Like then the weak side guy has to come over to like Cat, and then it's like
should be easy.
You
know, swing.
Then you can actually remember when Cat had that one where he like really faked the pass, and then took the shot in the first quarter. There, remember that? And I think they missed that. It's like that's the idea, but doing that under control or getting more comfortable with that look. I mean, that should. I don't know. I mean, but you know, going back to D'Lo, I always thought that would be a real unlocker of Cat in the pick and roll pick and pop game.
I think
but that didn't happen and it doesn't really happen with Ant, and it's I don't know, above my pay grade to understand why that's not happening.
Guys talk about it, even Mike I think like has mentioned this, like I think they want Cat to mix in more roles anytime he's in screen action as well, and he just doesn't dive to the rim like ever anymore. And I don't know if they think that's part of the problem. It's like it just pick and pop. Pick and pop, pick and pop, pick and pop isn't.
I think he sees Rudy in the dunker, man.
Yeah, I don't disagree, but like Carl's pretty good at like short roll lob to Rudy, you know, like we've seen that too.
Maybe you like do it a little bit higher, like you said,
give him a little bit more space to operate. And
so he's like catching it above the nail on the short roll, right? Yeah. Like, so then you have the lob, and theoretically, like Nikhil or Jaden in the corners or something like that. But
or if you have the rim, you have the rim, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think that's just, again, you know, what I've been saying since All-Star break of like, you know, what I'm ultimately going to pick of this team once they get to the playoffs is, you know, where the offense is, where my individual confidence is in the offense will have so much to do with how far I project them to go. And for that offense to get to that level, I think it is about having more just repeatable actions that they can go to, and they have, and maybe it's the film session thing, maybe it's the practice. It seems like they get those 2 days off and they come out and it's like, here's the offense, there's the movement, you're running this, you're running that. Like, I guess in the playoffs you get that after every game, but you want a greater consistency and not needing a film session to be like, here's how we get our two best players involved. And that's at least over the last couple of weeks has been definitely a struggle with those two.
Yeah. Here's where I think this is when I still like, we talked last week about how like Finch is always going to chase, you know, playing just good offense. And I agree with that. And I think that is something you should continue to push Cat and Ant towards. But like, even with Denver, like they play that great brand of offense a lot of the game, and then it's a two-man game down the stretch. You know, it's like it's Murray and Jokic and playing off of that.
Great point.
Like, if you can't, you should be able to like shift gears. And I think that's fine over these last 20 games to at least experiment with it. I don't know if Minnesota will do that, because I think in this first year of contention, it's like one seed. And I understand the general thought of importance of that in home court, like is like in your first year of really going for something, like you think of the importance of that. But I do think like you could sacrifice something. Like if they lost the late game because they were just trying to spam Ant and Cat pick and roll, so at least we could see it. We could see how bad it is or something, or maybe it works or whatever the case may be, like good or bad, you're right. And do it two times, you know, like two games, three games, do it a bunch in practice. See if it's something you can even kind of go to in the playoffs, or if it's something where it's like, not this year, maybe this offseason, we have to work on that. That I think that should be such a natural progression for them. And maybe, it's too late in the year. Maybe it is too late in the year to mix that in. I don't know.
Today's show is brought to you by the Game Time app, and Game Time is the fast and easy way to buy tickets for all the sports, music, comedy, and theater near you. I went to a concert last week, and the whole process of knowing where to go to get the tickets, it was stressful because the last time I went to a concert, it was a mess trying to get the tickets from the third-party website onto my phone. But with the Game Time app, I felt confident even last minute that I purchased my tickets at a fair rate, and that's because of their best price guarantee. And then with the app, it was easy to just use my phone and get into the concert I paid for, no confusion. So if you're looking for tickets to a Lynx game, a Twins game, or a concert this summer, check out the Game Time app. You'll get images of your seats when you buy, so you know what to expect when you arrive. You can buy tickets in a matter of seconds, two taps, and you're set. And tickets are sent directly to your phone, so no need to dig through your emails and click on a link here or there. You can just snag tickets without stress with the Game Time app. Download the Game Time app. Create an account and use code DaneMore for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Again, create an account and use the code DaneMore, all one word, for $20 off. Download Game Time today. Last minute tickets, lowest price guaranteed.
Today's show is brought to you by BetterHelp, H-E-L-P. It can be tough in the winter to manage our social batteries. I know for me, in the middle of basketball season, the mind gets drained. I want to connect with friends and family, but because my social battery is drained from work, it can be hard to, you know, use that day off to go be social and make those connections happen. I would assume for many of you that it can be easy to ignore your social battery this time of year. We feel spread thin. It's really important to know what the right amount of socializing is for us. And therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. Therapy can help you find coping skills and your process for setting boundaries. And if you are thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. All you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp, H-E-L-P. Visit BetterHelp.com/DaneMore to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/DaneMore.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for the Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
On the All NBA podcast that Adam Mares and Tim Legler do, like, Legler said, like, I don't think they trust Ant to operate in that screen and roll game again.
Well,
again.
Well, that's what I was going to say is what do we talk about all the time in late game offense when it doesn't work? You got to play through Mike more often. He's going to get the ball moving. He's going to do that sort of stuff. So it's
because can you not see, like, late in the game, just because I've seen in other actions, like Ant getting the screen, kind of just slow play off it and then backing it back out. I could see
I have seen him, again, not on volume, but like have that quick like sling back pass to Cat, you know, and
He did it against the Clippers.
They do it like
I'm saying on the last play of the game.
Oh, tried to do it.
Covered Cat.
That's true. It was taken away, you know, and that was on the Ant just had the lane to the basket there. He should have taken it. But I don't know. I mean, I think ultimately the answer with the late game offense is having multiple answers, you know, not having it be, it doesn't need to be spammed pick and roll with Cat and Ant or Mike and Rudy or whatever it is. It's all right. There's 4 minutes left in this game. We're going to get 7 possessions, like run it, having a handful of different things that you can go to.
You do want to
honestly
stop
steer
it.
You away from isolation. Yeah. Just yeah, steer yeah. you away from just straight isolation. I think that's right. huge.
I think you do one until they stop it, and then you go to the next thing. You know, like mm-hmm. it's not like we go ABC, ABC. Like you can go A. Okay, now mm-hmm. B, and right. maybe C, or back to A. That kind of thing. Yeah, I agree. I think that's a pretty huge thing that they need to get to and figure out, because it is hard. Like right now, watching them late in games and being like, yeah. Because you're going to play tight playoff games. To be like, yeah, they'll figure it out 4 out of 7 times. Like, I don't know. And it should come easier. Like, it really right. should. Especially with having 2 such highly skilled offensive players. I want to get one more. Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead.
Just
I was going to go into the bench thing. Yeah, okay.
I mean, I know he's got a lot going on right now, but, like, not getting out on the court to start the game is...
Sure.
Ridiculous. I mean, that is ridiculous. Like, you have to be ready to start the game. Like, everybody else out there, like, you get not only take a delay of game, but, like, it was so delayed that you weren't out there. That Nikhil Alexander-Walker to be like, oh, I guess it's me. Yeah. Like, that, to me, like, that, I just think, like, little things, like, Ant needs to sharpen up in general. We see it late in games with, like, little things, whether it's, like, box out or something here or there, getting back on defense. Like, if you want to be, like, a really great player, like, elite, one of the 5 best, like, you got to do a lot of things. Like, well, you got to really kind of be locked in at all times, not just when it's convenient to do so. I think that was a pretty big indictment. And then he obviously followed it up with kind of a stinker of a game in general. Like I said, I know he's got a lot going on. I get that. But, and so, like, just the stinker, sure. Get out on the court in time. Like, come on.
Right. Yeah. No, I mean, and it to me ties to the not taking bad teams seriously, you know, and just not, I don't think he's missing that if that's the Celtics out there. You know, I think sure. that yep. is the, that was a, you know, a factor, is just not being locked in on the game that night. And, you know, he does have a lot going on. I think he got distracted or whatever.
Yeah.
But absolutely. I mean, inexcusable, not okay. You like, he is 22, but it is just, in my eyes, so clearly moved to being his team.
That's just it, you know?
Right. Like,
it's a good thing he's got veteran teammates, because like, as much as we talk about, like, he's the leader, he doesn't set the example. Like, he might be the leader, but he does not set the example oftentimes in situations. So it is good he has veteran teammates around him.
The team is just so often a reflection of who he is. And I mean that in a positive way too. Mm-hmm. It's like, right. again, playing the Celtics or you're playing one of those teams, like, he is going to turn it up and the shadow of the rest of the team follows that. And that's being a star, right? Like that's being a star in this league. And he's being thrown into that at 22 because he's that good. And because his team is that good. But yeah, I mean, you mess around, like, could cost yourself a spot or two in the standings, what might hurt you in a playoff series, and you mess around at all in the playoffs, which I don't have that fear with Ant, because I do think it'll be more the Celtics type thing. But just a general, like, let's turn up the attentiveness on off the court, day to day. Like, it's go time now. You know, like, this is the end of the season. And you know, you look around the league and a lot of the other, like, top teams were kind of messing around at the beginning of the year, where the Wolves were, you know, going 13-2 in November, and those other teams weren't. Like, when I'm watching the Nuggets recently, man, I'm watching the Clippers recently, the Thunder, like, it's the dial's up. And I think that's because Kawhi Leonard and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and Nikola Jokic are turning the dial up to compete for this. And I think Ant is tired from All-Star, from personal life, from all that stuff. But, like, at the end of the day, he is being compared against the other star players on the top teams in the league, and they aren't doing that. So been a crazy stretch, back to backs, crazy stuff going on in his life. It's about to calm down a little bit more, and you need your star player to take advantage of that, turn it up, and get this team, you know, I think this is a really important stretch in the schedule right now. Indiana, Cleveland, LA, like that's going to move you. Where are you at when you get to Indiana? And then where are you at when you get to LA after you've played a back-to-back? Like, they can't go like 1-3 in these four games and still be, you know, competing for the one seed. I don't think the other teams are, it's not as flexible anymore.
Right. And you see, like, they've been very fortunate that the second half of their back-to-backs are against like Portland, Memphis. So like they got to slow starts. They don't have the energy. Like, and you can still win games because those teams are terrible. Like Portland, the Wolves played pretty poorly in general last night and won. And they would have got waxed by a lot of teams. Like if you go, I don't care if Donovan Mitchell's not playing Friday. I know he's not for Cleveland. If you go in after that Indiana game and bring that type of effort from last night, you're going to lose by 15. Like, and that's just the reality. And like, and that happens. I get it. Like Oklahoma City, second half of a back-to-back, lost to the Lakers last night.
Sure.
Because back-to-backs are hard. Like, and the Clippers lost to the Giannis-less Bucks because back-to-backs are hard. Like, and those teams are significantly better than the Portland Trailblazers, especially the version that went out last night. So like, if the Wolves want to win games, if they want to like stick up in the standings, like as these back-to-backs are coming, because they've got second half back-to-backs against Denver. And I think we looked it up. Yeah. One Denver will be on the second half of back-to-back in one of those two. And then you got a back-to-back in Cleveland. Like these are teams. Like, and if you don't want these to just be auto losses, you got to bring a better effort. And they've done it in the past. Like that Boston game, they did a really good job of in like terrible conditions, and they pushed it to OT. But it's got to like the attention to detail has to be there. The focus has to be there. I do think like just in general, like Ant's got to turn up the attention to detail because like even against good teams, like, not getting back on that late Norman Powell three. Like, that's poor attention to detail. The Bucks game, like, terrible. A minute left in the game, Giannis gets a key offensive rebound because Ant's just guarding him and just watching the hoop as Giannis is just running by and getting the board. Mm-hmm. It's like, attention to detail. Like, I know he turns it up against good teams, but, like, if that doesn't mean he's paying attention to the small details at all times. That means he's bringing it, like, getting into your chest defensively and being aggressive offensively. It's like, it's the small things that are the things you need to do again and again and again mm-hmm. so that it just becomes robotic. And if it's not, those are the things that you can't just turn up and down. You can't just turn up and down like, I'm going to box out this game. I'm going to run back every possession this game. That's either you do it or you don't. Those are the habits that really need to be formed. Not like I'm going to go score 35 points because I feel like it's tonight. You can do that. You can get into somebody's chest defensively. You can do that. It's getting into your head that I always box out. Especially when the game's on the line. I know, like, fourth quarter, I always box out. I always run back on defense. Those are
pick somebody up, man. The cross-match stuff is in transition defense from him is getting – and you're right, the one play when Norman Powell hit, it was like 4 minutes. You tweeted it out, and I saw it when Kawhi I was watching it.
I mean, Ant was, like, the slowest jog you've ever seen down the court. So Monte Morris is like, I can't give up a Kawhi layup, so I guess I have to take him. And then Ant doesn't even realize the cross matchup and just slowly jogs his way down to Kawhi. And Monte Morris is like, okay, now Norman Powell's got the ball wide open. And there's no way I'm getting out there, you know?
Mm-hmm. And we were talking about Ant in the, not that he is an all defensive player, but that he can be, right? That was after the Jaren Jackson Jr. game. And this is why he isn't, you know? Yeah. It's not that he doesn't have that dial to turn it up to. I mean, I like, compared it to Shea, who is super consistent defensively and does those things all the time. If you watch the Thunder, like defensively, he's dialed. But Ant on ball, just a one-on-one situation, obviously, particularly against like a Jaren Jackson Jr., Ant's gonna be able to do that way more than Shea does. Yeah. But there's a big gap in the aggregate of who Ant and Shea are defensively. Given all the other things over the course of the game, the running, the chasing, the matching up thing is I'm noticing that a lot when he isn't being asked to guard the main guy, and it's just like you're guarding one of the other wings, and the Wolves are just kind of loosey goosey with like anybody can kind of guard anybody. Well, Ant takes that loosey goosiness to like another level a lot of the time, and maybe doesn't pick up anyone. And that's the stuff that particularly in the playoffs, like
That can't give up any free buckets in the fourth quarter of playoff games.
Do you remember, this will be our last thing, but do you remember the, I think it was 21-22 season, I think, or maybe it's
I do remember that.
Where it was, a lot of guys got COVID, so maybe it was 2021, and then it was like the whole bench December unit had 21. To play.
Yep.
Yeah.
Greg Monroe got signed eventually.
Yes, yep. Nate Knight had a big game. Yeah. But I remember after that game, or after that kind of few games that a lot of the starters missed.
Yeah, they beat the Celtics, competitive loss to the Knicks.
Yep. And the starters were like, we saw what ball movement looked like from the bench guys, and like that was helpful. And then once they got back healthy, they kind of emulated more of that ball movement. The second unit right now, you know, no COVID or anything going on, but they are doing that. And I think, you know, the starting unit needs to take note of that. Here's Conley on that idea after the game last night.
Starters mimic the ball movement that the second unit seems to be
doing. You know, I think it comes a lot from the energy they put into it. Nas, Kyle, Nikhil, you see how fast they move, how much they cut. They screen, they get off of each other really quickly and create space. I think we can, with our first unit, we can be a little bit slower because we have guys who can post, we have guys who can play inside and out, so there's a lot of different opportunities there, so it might make us a little bit slower as a group. But that group has to, we have to figure out how to get that starting unit to play with a little bit more force, a little bit more pace. It'll open things up, I think, for Ant and everybody else to make easier plays.
I didn't realize until just playing that you could hear Ant in the background saying, I lost track of time. So there's your explanation.
This game is seven?
Yeah. Oh, this is nine. Portland's a West Coast team.
Oh, yeah, right. Other time I play Portland, it's 9 o'clock.
do you think that this can take, right? Like having, and the second unit has been pretty consistently good and doing it. I know Nas had a bad game against the Clippers, right? But broadly, he's been super active, super effective. Nikhil, we talked about Kyle kind of getting back into his rhythm. Monte Morris has really kind of settled into that role, and that role's kind of growing, it seems like. Is it apples to oranges, though? I mean, that group just plays a different way. You're not posting up Nas at 18 feet, right? Yep. You're not having Nikhil isolate like you would have Ant do so. So I don't know if there's some apples to oranges there, but that general feeling of moving the ball and playing more like the second unit, which is just kind of faster. Like, they got to get faster, man. I mean, and obviously the no fast break points for two games is a good example of that. I care more about the speed in the half court and the proactivity. Yeah. Like that's the thing rewatching these games is the amount of times where it's just stagnant, you know, when the starting five is out there and that, you know, that's got to change.
Yeah, I agree. And the second unit, like Monte Morris has been huge in that as much as anything, like he's hit shots. Like he really, like he's hit the three ball, like he's provided some spacing. And I think that's helped Kyle too. And, mm-hmm. And just in general, like Kyle being more assertive has become less of a ball stopper. And like, or think like the ball would get kicked to Kyle and it'd be like, well, he doesn't want to shoot it. So anything you just did kind of resulted in a zero.
But way less of that. Yeah.
Yeah. It's way less. Like that's, I really think like that, those have just been two easy things. Then Nets kind of fixed the whole thing. And now the second unit looks really good. The first unit will never look exactly like the second unit. That is not the way that, you know, basketball is played with stars. It's just how do you get it more often? You know, like right. Like it, yeah. It's okay if two possessions out of 10 have stickiness. It's fine. Like, at least six good possessions out of 10, you know, like so everybody feels involved. And then, you know, two Cat takes two, Ant takes two, and the other six, the ball's really moving around. Like, that's better. You know, there's some balance to be found there because obviously the easiest offense, like Mike said, for Ant or Carl is if it's swinging and then they can attack a closeout or whatever. Defense, just the help isn't there. I don't know. Like, I think they can find it for a little bit, but I've been pretty steadfast in this. I think at where they're at in their careers, and Cat can be coached to play like that kind of offense for small segments. And then I do think just in general, they're going to kind of revert back to what they do right now because that's still who they are as players and how they see the game. I don't think over the final fourth of the season, it's going to like the epiphany is going to come and we're going to see just beautiful offense from the Wolves starters. Like, I think we might see a couple games where it's like, all right, and then it's going to slip back and then they're going to have to do it again. And then it's going to get back up there and then it's going to slip back and they have to do it again. I just think that's where they're at. I still think there's a time where they can get there. Like, I think maybe by the time he's 28, if they keep pounding it in, Ant will see the game at a significantly higher level, or at least understand what he's supposed to be doing, or what they're asking for him on a nightly basis.
Finch is like, has his rotation down. It's like been the same the entirety of the season. Even like when someone's out, you know, Shake Milton goes exactly into this role, or Troy Brown Jr. does, whatever. Like, it is such a structured rotation with kind of the same groups all the time, which leads to a lot of positives. Continuity, I think that actually matters a lot in rotations. I think teams benefit from that. Again, thinking about some of the late game offense, I was thinking about, would it make sense to have a different closing lineups at times? And, you know, I don't think they're going to necessarily go to that, but I wonder if there's like tweaks to the general rotation where it's like aiming more at getting Carl out there against second unit bigs or something like that, or getting Ant out there in that group that runs and ball moves more with Nas and Nikhil and some of those guys. Like, there are still 20 games left in the season, which to me means there is enough time where you could kind of mess around with finding a more blended identity of different, you know, different groups. I don't think Finch will do that because, again, 62 games in the season, it's almost been the exact same rotation the entirety of the time. But I don't know. I'm just, at least in the moment, feeling like I wouldn't hate if over this road trip, they experimented with something a little bit different. And I don't even know what like the one would be. I think I would say Ant with kind of like the faster group there.
Yeah.
Honestly, splitting
had,
Cat.
He had a lot of experience.
I think would make sense.
Yeah, Ant has had good runs in the past in his career where he is kind of in those blended lineups and frankly taking advantage of their ball movement. Like, we've seen that in the past. It works. Do you think rotation tinkering is advantageous, like actually builds towards the playoffs when playoff rotations are different in general?
Well, I think it goes to, are you going to play nine in the playoffs? Like,
and how much
rotation you're going to use in the playoffs? I don't think so.
Right. A ninth guy probably just isn't going to play as much. Like, might
well, Mike's going to play, what is Mike average? 28 minutes a game. Like, in the playoffs last year, it was like 35. Okay, I think it was higher than that last year.
Sure.
I mean, it's,
they were short handed, but yeah.
Like, that's going to dial up, you know, even Rudy maybe a little bit more. I mean, Ant's probably going to play 40, right? You know, so yeah, the rotation is going to change. Obviously, they're going to have a different rotation than they've had all season in the playoffs. I think that's just a factor, at least shorter stints there. And, you know, to that end, I would kind of be thinking about, all right, like Morris would probably be the one that falls out of it, but I think in the playoffs, they do need a Nas unit. Like, they do need three good Nas games in the first round series, right? Can you do things to curtail to that more often? I don't know. I mean, I don't have a specific suggestion in my head. It just is feeling like, and maybe it's just because Cat and Ant haven't been playing very well recently, but it feels like that an adjustment, you know, could be made there, if for no other reason than the second unit is doing more of what Finch wants to do than the Cat and Ant together groups are. So I don't know, something to track, but
yeah,
eventually they're going to need to find a playoff rotation, even though they've very clearly found a regular season rotation. What does that look like, I guess, is the bigger question.
Yeah, I do think even still, even if it doesn't hold up rotation wise, I do see value in what you're saying. And like, you get Ant with that second unit, that maybe can even just like open Ant's eyes a little bit to be like, yeah, this is fun. This is good. We should
run
this more with the starters, you know?
Yeah.
Getting like a taste of it. Getting out, playing fast offensively, like playing fast just within your sets, like all that kind of stuff, moving the ball, like whipping it around, you know, just driving against advantages, like seeing that a bunch and being like, oh yeah, this is how we're supposed to play. Just a reminder to kind of like turn that bulb back on. It could be beneficial in that way for sure. But yeah, I mean, like, Cat and Ant's shooting splits since the All-Star break are not good. And just like,
I might talk for a lot.
Yeah, the numbers just bear out that what you're seeing is like everything looks really hard when they're on the court right now, which is, I think, makes the second unit look all the better. Even the second unit, like you said, with the Kyle Anderson numbers, like those are reflective entirely of like that group's been really good. But this, for the starters, it's been hard. The Clippers game, I thought like the first quarter that was really good. Other than that, it's been tough.
Yeah. Well, they have an opportunity here against four pretty good opponents in Indiana, Cleveland, Clippers, and Lakers over the next four to kind of stress test this a little bit more. A couple days off before the Indiana game. Kind of whatever the what was Bridges' line film session and back to the drawing board. I don't remember what was Finch's line. I played that clip earlier. I don't know where it was. Come up here after our day off and start building things back in a better way. They got to do that. I think they got to do that starting in Indiana. Like
that's a great spot. That's that first game. I mean, like generally speaking, Indiana has not been able to, even like the beginning of last year when the Wolves weren't awesome. One of their best games.
Yeah.
They couldn't
read it. I don't think. Remember that. Yeah,
they couldn't defend a lick, and that Indiana's still not a good defensive team, not playing particularly well. This is a great chance to like start establishing some offensive rhythm. But when you couldn't do it against Portland last night,
right?
That makes you think like, can you do it against anybody? But yeah, Indiana's pace and whatnot, like let that inject some pace into yourself too, you know?
Yeah.
Like, maybe it can be a spark in some way.
Yeah, it's I mean, the Kings one is like that too, where it's like, well, they're going to play faster against you. So you're going to have to sometimes need to play fast. And I think the Pacers game will be interesting for that too, to be like, all right, don't let the pace, can the Wolves play without letting the pace sort of overwhelm them and actually help them, you know, get going a little bit. So we will see. That's what's coming up next. I'm actually going to Indiana and Cleveland. Britt is too. We're going to do pods after both of those games this week. Kyle and I will also go tomorrow morning, Wednesday morning. But Jace, this was good. Appreciate you doing it, man.
Always a good time.
Always a good time.
Always a good time. You always send it to me, and I'm like, what do I say this time? Thanks.
I don't know.
Cool. Yeah. See you next week.
I loved it.
Yeah.
Well, he's Jace Frederick. You can follow him on Twitter at Jace Frederick. I am Dane at Dane Moore MBA until tomorrow, Wednesday. So Kyle, yep, he's Jace. I'm Dane. How I'm feeling, man, I hope it never stop, yeah. Green and hot so you can find me in the crowd, yeah, yeah. Don't let standards ever bring you down, yeah. Hope you dancing like nobody else around.